Hey, everybody, and welcome to our Tick Bootcamp podcast episode with Alexandra Brooke Clark. She's an honorary New Yorker because she spent 11 years in Brooklyn. And just from our chat offline already, I know she's a real Brooklyn person at heart. And we're also here with another New Yorker representing me in my co-host role instead of Rich, which is she's way better than Rich, but just don't tell him that. Emma Pickolis, and I'm probably mispronouncing your last name, Emma, and you just told me it, so I apologize. But Emma was featured in episode 167 of our podcast. And Alexandra has been a big listener of Tick Bootcamp, and already we've hit it off, and we can't wait to get into it. So, welcome, Alexandra. Welcome back, Emma. And Emma, if you can kick it off for us, please.
Absolutely. I'm very excited to be here. How are you today, Alexandra?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. As I said, I'm excited.
Great.
So, can you explain what growing up in Massachusetts was like? Or you grew up in Massachusetts, and you moved to Brooklyn. You were a transplant.
So I was born in a little town called Marblehead, Massachusetts, and it's this sleepy little town on the water, and it's like a Nantucket, Martha's Vineyard. It's a fishing town. I think there's 20,000 people total. It's super tiny. Everyone knows each other. There's like one to five restaurants ish that we go to. Everyone sees each other every day. So it was a really
Nice.
beautiful childhood, cozy and quaint. Yeah, really
Okay.
lovely. Yeah.
Opposite from Brooklyn.
Opposite from Brooklyn. A lot of my family's from New York, like a lot of my cousins and all of our family friends. So we spent so much time in New York growing up. We'd go to shows all the time and we'd drive in. My mom's really fun and she'd be like, "Do you want to drive to New York for dinner? Let's go to New York
Oh,
for dinner." So
nice.
like that was always really fun. So New York always had a really special place in my heart.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so how old were you when you moved to New York?
I graduated college in 2007. I moved to New York in 2011, 2010 or 2011. And I was in the fashion industry. I, like so many young girls, was like, I'm gonna go to New York and I'm gonna be in fashion and I'm gonna do all this. And I loved it. I was in fashion for many, many years until I got really burnt out, which definitely assisted with my illness. But I was in fashion. And then I started back in 16, the year I got married, 2016, I started working for my mother's company who does risk management, workers' compensation, stayed in Brooklyn and lived there until COVID when we escaped the day before COVID.
Okay.
Yes.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yes.
So when you lived in Massachusetts, you were in a very rural area, you said?
So it's not rural, it's right on the water.
Oh, okay.
It's not wooded. I'm right on the water. I'm 5 seconds from the water. But I grew up going to summer camp in the woods. I was in my backyard all the time. We summered in Nantucket and Martha's Vineyard. So I was very exposed to wooded areas growing up for sure.
Have you heard about ticks at all in your childhood or Lyme
Nothing.
disease?
I never, all I knew was that you get it. All I knew is deer and tick. I don't know. When I was little, I just thought like, okay, don't go near deers because they have ticks. I had no idea. No one ever said to me, you need to look out for them. You need to wear tick spray, wear high socks. I had no idea. And I was rolling around in the grass and climbing trees and doing all of the things and just like blissfully ignorant and had no clue at all.
And now when you came to New York, you went to school in the city,
I
or
actually went
you
to
had
school.
graduated college and then
I
moved to New
graduated.
York?
Yeah, so I went to school in Florida. I graduated. I moved to New York City. And I was in New York City from 2011 through 2020, right when COVID happened. First, we started in the West Village, and then I decided to move to Brooklyn. We lived in Brooklyn Heights. And it was this magical, beautiful pocket of everything. And my son was born there. And we just, it was, I could have never imagined that life wouldn't have always been that beautiful and perfect. I was so lucky. And then COVID happened and we left when COVID happened.
Now you had your son in New York. At that point, was tick still, you were in the city, so was tick a thought, a
No,
word in your.
I had no idea. I mean, I had no idea. I thought you could only get bit by a tick if you like lived in a hut in the woods. And like there was like I had no clue. And I didn't spend a lot of time other than summers. We would leave the city in the summer and either go to the Hamptons or back to Marblehead where I grew up, or we do Nantucket every year. I was on concrete 24/7. I literally was in the subway walking on, I mean, I would walk through Central Park sometimes, but it was never a thought ever in my mind about I didn't even know the word. I never crossed my mind. No.
So you were living in the city, you were thriving, life was a dream, you had a very healthy social life, you were working, and you enjoyed working.
I loved working. I had my son very easily, which I'm surprised about now, looking back at all the stuff I had going on that I didn't know about. But we got pregnant on the first try. Was a huge baby. He was born almost 10 pounds. I know my husband's 6'4". It's his fault. And I had a really hard pregnancy. He was so heavy that he sprained my sacrum. So I didn't love being pregnant. I wasn't running around being like, I love growing a baby. I was like, get him out of my body. I can't do this anymore. I wasn't sleeping. I could barely walk. He was so like just put so much pressure on me. And after he was born, I felt great for the most part, but I needed to end up having hip surgery. And at the end of 2019, he was born in 2018. And at the end of 2019, I had hip surgery. I was a dancer my whole life, and I had ruined my hips way, way earlier on. But because of the pressure of him inside of me, the wear and tear just escalated, and I had to have labral repair, and I had hip impingement. So I went in for the surgery at the end of 2019, and that's where stuff started to kind of get wonky.
Can I ask you a quick question there on that, Alexandra? And Emma, sorry to interrupt, but generally this triggers. For me, it was a dental procedure for my first symptom. And it sounds like for you, this was a big trigger for you to have a health decline. Looking back, were there any other subtle signs that indicated you were having health issues that you really didn't even notice?
Absolutely. So I was diagnosed with Hashimoto's and hypothyroidism in 2014. I was working 12-hour days. I wasn't eating. I wasn't sleeping. I was in fashion. I was really overexerting myself, which was what was expected of us in the fashion industry. And I started getting sick all the time. So, like, I would get a cold every week, or I would feel dizzy and feel like I was going to pass out, or I would get the flu all the time. My throat would hurt. And I went to this random endocrinologist because my PC was like, I don't know. As we all know this story, but sent me to this endocrinologist and he said, let me test your thyroid. Tested my thyroid. Lo and behold, I had hypothyroidism and Hashimoto's. And basically, they were like, here's medication, be on your way. And that was it. And at this point in my life, I thought doctors were gods. And if they told me to drink gasoline, I would have drank gasoline. I had no idea. I didn't question. I wasn't an advocate for myself. I just took my medication and went on my day. And nothing really changed for me, other than I just had to take medication now for the rest of my life. My hip surgery was so after I had my son and I had was on the medication for my thyroid, my hip surgery was definitely a trigger. All of my doctors agree that this was a trigger. It basically woke everything up. I think everything was kind of kept at bay, and this along with what happened with COVID, the stress of COVID, that's the story that we've written ourselves, right? That we think that I was bitten as a child, dormant, was living a really healthy life. And then this triggered everything, and everything woke up after that surgery.
Yeah, and I wonder when you saw the doctor that diagnosed you with Hashimoto's and hypothyroidism, probably a rheumatologist, correct? So, what's interesting about this is oftentimes when people have underlying tick-borne infections or any microbial infection for that matter, and they get a diagnosis of an autoimmune disease, which you had really, a whole bunch of autoimmune, I'm sure, markers in your blood work. If you treat with traditional rheumatological medicine, it actually makes you worse because it'll suppress your immune system and allow Lyme to flourish even more. So is that
Absolutely.
ever discussed? And it drives me crazy that rheumatologists and neurologists aren't more Lyme aware, because if they were, they would always think, well, if it's Lyme or an underlying infection, we could be making the patient worse. And it almost never happens. So is that a discussion? And if not, do you think that's what happened to you, where the medication for the, for the from the rheumatologist actually made you more susceptible to have that crash after the surgery?
I think it was all of the things. Yeah. So my father had thyroid cancer. He had his thyroid removed when I was in high school. Got it removed, living, still healthy, just got it taken out and essentially just continued to live his life. So when I went to see this doctor, they asked about my family history. And in passing, they were like, oh, okay, this makes sense. Maybe you have a disposition from your father, hypothyroidism, Hashimoto's, it's not a big deal. And I remember sitting there saying, is this a big deal for me? I have to take medication, prescription medication for the rest of my life. That's it. That seems pretty intense, right? To now be told I can't ever come off of it. And basically they just said to me, you just take this. It'll give you this synthetic hormone. You'll live a very long life. I'll see you every 6 months for a routine lab. And I took it. And I think that when I started taking that, everything shifted for me for sure. Like you said, I think not only was I on a pharmaceutical, which probably didn't sit well with everything else that was going on in my body, but I didn't really understand the disease. I didn't understand what it was. No one explained it to me. And of course, I did my research as much as I could, but it was so casual. And no one ever said, oh, maybe this is a marker of something else deeper that's going on, or maybe we should delve a little deeper and run it. No one ever ran an additional lab on me at that point. It was just my thyroid. So I think it absolutely, and I'm sure the medication still to this day plays a role on what's going on inside of me. Absolutely.
Yeah, I only bring that up because I feel like we need to be more in tune with our bodies because oftentimes doctors may have good intentions. And I
Yes.
believe in your case, they certainly did have good intentions. But if we better listen to our bodies, we can more early on in the experience pick things up that they're not working, right? And today I'm much more in tune with my body than I was 10, 15 years ago. And because of that, I feel like I'm able to curb things before they progress to a really bad place. So that's kind of where I'm bringing it up. And I apologize, Emma, I'll let you jump back in to continue on. But I'm already picking up a whole bunch of lessons here, these little like mini life lessons that we've acquired, and they still are valuable today, whether you're, at the tail end and now in this maintenance mode of Lyme, or if you're early on and you're sick. This is a really important lesson to listen to your body, communicate that to your doctor, and set guidelines and rails to ensure you're not going to continue to go downhill because of a medication that has the best of intent by your doctor,
But and it's so careless, in my opinion, to just. It's never just hypothyroidism. It's never just Lyme. It's never just Candida, right? It's never just one thing. And I think that that's why functional medicine, I wish I had known about this so many years ago, because it seems so reckless, looking back at this, to think that they just gave this to me and sent me on my way and didn't press any further, right? It was a very much you check the box of this and I'm going to send you on your way. And I think what you just said is so true that when we go through experiences like this, we become almost too in tune with our body and we become so hypersensitive that I know, just speaking for myself, I am so in tune with my body to this point, almost at a detriment, that I have to remember that sometimes it's just a cold. Sometimes I just have a headache. Sometimes, I'm just having an off day and I'm tired. So, yes, I think that we become so hyper fixated and sensitive because of our traumatic experience. But I think that also doctors don't listen as much as they should, and not because they're not good people or they don't have good intention, but I think it's because that's how they're trained. And you're given 15 minutes with a doctor and then they have to go on to the next. So it's really unfortunate. And I'm really, really grateful for functional medicine that takes the root cause approach versus Western at this point.
I agree. And it's funny how Lyme will lead you to functional medicine. So back to your hip impingement. And so is this where now you had your hip impingement in 20, that surgery 2019. Okay. And then 2020, COVID hit, you
So
guys decided to
let me
leave the
just tell you,
city.
it's a really crazy story. Do you want to? I'll tell you.
Yes,
I'll
let's
tell
hear
you. Okay. So
it.
I went in for my surgery thinking that I would just go in for my surgery, come out of my surgery. I knew it was a really long recovery. They told me I had about a 3 month recovery. Most of that would be bed. I had to stick my leg in this machine and it like pressed it up and down to keep it from moving. But when I got out of the surgery, I became impacted. My bowels never unfroze from the anesthesia. And I spent 3 days in the hospital. They let me go. I went home, and after 4 or 5 days at home, hadn't gone to the bathroom, not to be too TMI, but my doctor called me and he's like, have you gone to the bathroom? And I'm like, no, I haven't actually, that you say that. And he was like, We, just keep an eye on it. It's fine. Lo and behold, the next day I ended up being taken by ambulance to the hospital because my bowels never unfroze. I had to have 5 to 7 manual disimpactments. It was horrific. It was more traumatic than the actual hip surgery because your body's already in fight or flight from the hip surgery. Then you're getting in an ambulance. Then you're being rushed to the hospital. Then you're in a hospital, and it's an extremely painful procedure that I had to have so many times. I was laying on my hip that I wasn't supposed. I mean, it was horrible, which I also think brought everything up right to the surface again because I was
Definitely.
so stressed out.
Yeah.
So I was clear. I finally got home. I went back home. I was okay. I did my recovery. Looking back, the doctor did say to me, "You're recovering slower than most of my patients." And at the time, I didn't. I'm just like, oh yeah, well, I'm a fragile bird. This is just like, of course, this would happen to me. I just wouldn't, right? But I didn't really think that deeply on it. And looking back, I think my body was going through it. And I think that I kept just saying, like, oh, it's the surgery. It's the surgery. I'm tired. It's the surgery. So that was in December of 2019. The week I got cleared to go back to the office in Brooklyn was the week of COVID. And I remember taking my little crutches and like walking to work, and it was like down the street, but it took me like 40 minutes to get there. But I was so happy to finally be able to be a human again. And I would go to work, and I remember being at work, and I remember getting an alert saying, there's something called coronavirus in China. It's here, blah, 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 blah. And long story short, I got a call from my friend whose sisters worked for Cuomo, and they said, we're shutting the city down. You have to get out of the city. I was like, oh my God, I can't be in the city with a 90-pound dog and a 2-year-old baby in a two-bedroom apartment. Let's go to Marblehead where I grew up. Let's get out of the city. So I remember, like, I hugged our nanny who we love so dearly, and I said, we'll be back in a few weeks. Don't worry. And we rented an SUV. We didn't have a car because we were in New York, and we rented an SUV. We packed up like a suitcase for the weekend, took the dog, took my son August, put him in the car. My husband came home from work, and I was like, we're going to Boston. He's like, what do you mean? I'm like, we're out of here. And he's like, you're being crazy. But we did it, and we landed in Boston. And 3 weeks to the day after we moved to Boston, we moved into my parents' house until we figured out that's when I started getting sick. 3 weeks to the day after we moved home. So leaving New York was a very traumatic experience for me. I didn't want to leave New York. I was almost forced to leave because I felt like I was protecting my son, and that's when I started really getting sick 3 weeks after into my parents' house.
So what were those symptoms like, if you don't mind?
So yeah, so I would wake up. So it started with fatigue, but when I say fatigue, it was fatigue. It was like I could not take my legs and put them over the side of the bed. I was like, what's going on? I got 12 hours of sleep. It's COVID. Nothing's going on. I like went for a walk around the block today. I wasn't working out. I still couldn't because of my hip. What's happening? And it started with fatigue, and like it would be fatigue for 3 days, and then it would go away. And then like a month later, out of nowhere, no rhyme or reason, the fatigue would come back. And then it would get like fatigue and nausea a month later, and then like fatigue, nausea, diarrhea. And then all of these symptoms started stacking, stacking, stacking. And everyone was, and I'm so lucky, my family's so supportive, and no one ever disregarded, but they were like, it's a really scary time. Like, we're in the middle of a scary election. We're in the middle of COVID. You have a 2-year-old son. They're telling us we can't eat fruits and vegetables without dousing them in Lysol. This is what was going on. Like, remember OG COVID when like you were
Can't
wearing
get
a mask,
toilet paper.
you can't get toilet paper. It was just the stress level was through the roof. And they were like, maybe you just are stressed out because you had to move, or maybe you're stressed out because your life changed so much. And I just said, nope, that's not what's happening. And I established care when we decided to move here. I established care with the best, and I heavy quotation that, the best doctor of Mass General. There was like a year and a half wait list. He was like world renowned. And I finally got in and I saw him, and I said, I'm so tired. I'm so nauseous. I have diarrhea. I'm dizzy. I get these weird spells where like I start sweating profusely and my hands start shaking. and I feel like I'm going to pass out, and I get ringing in my ears. And he's like, "All right, let's take your labs." Took my lab, and he literally looked at me and he was like, "You are the epitome of health. You're perfect. Everything is fine. Every level is fine. You're great. You're depressed." And that was my first experience with gaslighting in the Western medicine. And I remember leaving that appointment going like, maybe I am. Like, maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. Like, kind of like not trusting myself.
Questioning.
Yeah, which I never, I'm a very strong person. I always listened to, but I was like, okay. It was easier to almost accept that because I felt like I was dying all the time. So it was easier to accept that. And this kept going on, and I kept fighting and fighting and fighting. And then we realized that my thyroid levels were off. So we adjusted the meds, and then I felt better. And then we bought a house, and we moved into our house in January of 2021. And I remember the first night at my house, I couldn't stand up. And I looked at my husband and I said, "Are you feeling, do you feel weird? Like, do you feel weird in here?" And he's like, "No, what do you mean?" And I said, "I feel weird in this house. Something's off in this house." But I don't know. At this point, I had no idea about mold. I had no idea about all of the other environmental
I
issues.
think everybody listening is screaming mold before you said the
Mold.
word mold,
Yeah.
right? So
Our
it's just so
mold
funny that you said
compasses
it.
are on
I
fire.
was like,
Like, you idiot. We knew this 20 minutes ago. So we moved in, and I started getting very strange symptoms. And it started becoming very neurological for me. I started hallucinating. I started looking in the mirror, and like it was a horror movie. My face looked smoky. Like it looked like someone had smoked out my face. My eyes turned black. I looked like demonic. And I started being like, "Oh my God, I am going crazy. Like, they're right. I'm depressed. I must be depressed. I'm going crazy. What's going on?" And I hired a wonderful concierge doctor out of Mass General to help me navigate what to do, because at this point I was declining at such a rapid rate that I could barely get out of bed in the morning. I couldn't be the mom I wanted to be. I couldn't be the wife I want. I couldn't be anything. I was such a hot mess, like on all fronts. And I met with this doctor, and I went in and I saw her, and I told her my symptoms, and she said, "I want to stop you." And I said, "Okay." And she said, "Sweetie, I think you have multiple sclerosis." And I was like, "Oh my God." My world stopped. My ears started ringing. I was like, "Multiple sclerosis. Oh my God. What?" I didn't really know that much about the disease other than you don't want to get it. It's so scary. It's so serious. And I didn't know. It just really scared me. And when she said that to me, everything changed for me, because my body shut down emotionally at that point. So physically it had shut down before, but emotionally my body shut down when she said MS. I had to be medicated to go get an MRI because I was so freaked out. I couldn't stop hyperventilating and crying. I went in, I had the scan, I didn't have MS. And then we were back at square one, and she said, "I don't know what's wrong with you. Your labs are fine. You look great. I think, again, you should see a psychiatrist." And we all have this story.
Alexandra, can I pause you there? Because I want to take you down a side road real quick. Is that all right?
A what?
I want to take you down a side road real quick. Have
Ah,
a side conversation. Okay.
yes.
So I want to come back to the MS and then the MRI, and then
Yes.
it's all in your head, because if I don't know, if I can't find out what's physically wrong with you and I'm a doctor, it must be psychological, because I would know otherwise, right? The whole arrogance part of the doctors. And again, good doctors, bad doctors. So one of the things I want to talk about is we often get questions from soon to be moms, or young women who want to be moms, or mothers who have several children asking us for advice about being a mom with Lyme disease. And I think you're a really good example of somebody who has had a very difficult health journey. And we're going to get to this, and I'm, getting ahead. But if anybody listening to this podcast knows, you're doing extremely well now, let's be real, right? But we're going to get to the how you got there. But when you had your son, I believe his name was August,
August.
right? It's August, I should say. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
When all this happened, different people in the Lyme community respond differently to pregnancy. Some of them feel like all their symptoms are gone and like they feel amazing. Then they have their child and they crash and they get really bad. They get the postpartum like symptoms, they get the physical symptoms, all rush back after pregnancy. Some people feel worse during pregnancy and better after pregnancy. Can you just share with us what your experience was like during pregnancy? Because it was festering in you, but you didn't crash yet. So can you just share with us the experience of pregnancy in your journey?
Absolutely. And it's a really good question. And one of the things I always want to do is help moms or pregnant women with Lyme to know that it's okay and it's hard, but you'll get through it, right? And so when I was pregnant with my son, Lyme disease wasn't on my radar, right? So I just thought everything I was experiencing was pregnancy related. I gained 75 pounds, which is I was 117 pounds going into it. I gained 75 pounds. It was crazy how much weight I gained, and I wasn't eating a lot. It was all inflammation and it was all water. I was tired, my bones hurt, my muscles ached, I couldn't sleep, I was having like back pain, I was having all these things, but I don't know if they were Lyme related. Do I think they were probably made worse? Absolutely. I think a lot of pregnant women feel all of these things who don't have Lyme, but I think that everything was just heightened because of the Lyme. And after I had my son, it was a slow burn to crashing. And I think that when you're a mom, whether you have Lyme or not, you get this surge of adrenaline right when you have your kid because you have to. And it's really funny, and it's so funny how the universe works. I was lucky enough to ha have a baby nurse, and I interviewed 10, 12 baby nurses, and I interviewed this one nurse who we ended up choosing. And I said to her, I was referred to you by this friend of a friend. And she said, that was a really, really interesting experience because this girl had Lyme disease. And I said, oh, what does that really mean? And she said, well, she had to be able to sleep. I couldn't wake her to feed the baby in the middle of the night because if she doesn't sleep, everything gets thrown off for her. And I think that always stayed with me because when I had my son, I didn't know I had Lyme and I was up all night. And I think that that really screwed me up. And I think that that again just set me back. So to answer your question, if you have Lyme disease, if you know you have Lyme disease, right? It's right. And you're going to have a baby and you decide to breastfeed or you're bottle feeding or whatever it is, I just be kind to your body. Don't push yourself to feel this pressure to do everything right away. Don't feel this pressure to wake up 15 times a night and feed the baby. Have help, whether it's your husband, whether you can, if you're lucky enough financially, if you can afford a night nurse. If you can't afford a night nurse, have the baby next to you so you don't have to get up out of the bed to walk to the baby's room. Just try all of these tips that you can to just make it as easy as you can because it takes us a full minimum 5 years to heal from pregnancy. That's minimum. I've heard some doctors say 7, I've heard some say 2. But when you're pregnant, after you have the baby, your body's in shock. I had a C-section. I couldn't really walk. I mean, it was a lot. So do things to make it easier for you if you can. I know people have thoughts about co-sleeping. It's a controversial situation, but when you have Lyme, you have to take care of yourself or you're just going to decline. So do whatever you need to do that feels comfortable and don't be afraid to ask for help. That's another thing I always tell pregnant moms with my company. Don't be afraid to say, I know I just had a baby. I'm supposed to be superwoman. I'm supposed to just like know how to do all of this. Ha ask for help, whoever it can come from. Hopefully you have people that can help you, but be kind to yourself after that phase. It's a really tough one.
What about the fear of congenital Lyme? And I think, it's pretty well established at this point that congenital Lyme is a possibility and has happened in some cases if you have an active infection. And there's some debate about what defining an active infection and the odds of passing Lyme onto your child, even if you have an active infection. And, we don't know those answers, to be honest. I don't believe, right? Is it 100%? Is it 50%? If you have an active infection, what does that mean? Tests aren't good enough. Research studies aren't vast enough to really give us those answers. But we do know it does happen and it can happen. So what advice would you give to young moms or people that are looking to have a child that have had Lyme, do have Lyme, or are not sure if they're in full remission, if they have active Lyme? What is your gauge there when people approach you in the community that want to have a child and have had Lyme?
A really good question, and it's very layered. I still haven't had another child. I have one child. I'm still dealing with this myself. It's really hard because there's not enough documented proof, yes or no, you will or you won't. I think that all of the doctors that I've worked with who are functional have always said to me, if you feel good, right? I would never give anybody the advice, if you're really sick with Lyme, get pregnant. But those are what my doctor said to me. Like when I was at my worst, they all said to me, I do not professionally advise you to get pregnant right now. Wait until you're in remission. Wait until you feel better. The body is miraculous. The body does amazing things. We don't know what happens in utero to pass it or to not pass it, and we can't test it until the baby's out. If you feel good and you're able to get back to 80% of your life, 50% of your life, a semblance of your life, and you want to have a child, and that's more important to you than taking the risk, then you have to do that. No one would ever tell me, should I, shouldn't I, once I'm in remission. But that was always very heavy on my head and my heart, and I still haven't had another kid. Do I think a lot of the reason might be that? Yeah. Do I think that's also crazy because I'm so healthy right now? Yes. So it's all about we have to listen to our bodies. And I think that women who don't know and they're like, well, maybe I feel healthy now, but what if I don't? I hear you because I think about that all the time. What if I got pregnant and I felt really good and then it pushed me back and I went back to ground zero? Like, what if I have to have another C-section? What if I had the C-section and then I'm thrown all the way back into the trauma and starting all over again? And so I think we have to listen to our body. My advice is listen to your body, talk to your doctors. If you're feeling good, I like to hope that your baby's going to be okay. I like to hope that our body is so miraculous that it'll protect us. If it's not, I got good advice once. If you have a baby and your baby has Lyme, you are so educated. You are so in touch with everybody. You are so in the know. You are so obsessed with health and wellness that you are the person a Lyme baby should be born to because you will protect them. You will know what to do. You have the resources. So if
Yeah,
you want
I
to
love
have
that
a,
answer. I have to tell you, I absolutely love every part of your answer, but I do want to challenge you on one piece because Emma and I were just talking personally offline before you came on about something that I'm dealing with in my own personal recovery journey, right? I believe, and we've had a lot of leaders and experts on in this podcast, that when we're sick for so long, our brain, our neural pathways change, and they're modified to protect us in some way because we need to have these safety signals to make sure we don't do things to make ourselves worse. So for me, it was, avoid people in large crowds, which was really hard for me to overcome, but I've done it. Then it was, okay, what I'm dealing with now is extended travel. There's a fear there, but I feel rationally I'm healthy enough to do it, but I feel I still have those neural pathways telling me danger, danger, don't do it. And I think where you're at, Alexandra, is you're in a place where you are healthy enough to have another child. I firmly, strongly believe that, but I
You're
think
right.
you have residual neural pathways that at one point served you well that are no longer serving you well. So what do you think about that?
I think you couldn't be more correct. I still, on a daily basis, have to retrain my brain because of the trauma that I went through. I will never wake up and not know or think about what happened to me. And I haven't even gotten into the crazy stuff with you yet, but that trauma and those feelings of fear and fight or flight and breakdown and loneliness. I mean, those will always be with me. And I have to do what you said every day before I get out of my bed. I take deep breaths and I have to say to myself, we, meaning me and my inner child, who we've become very close in the past 4 years, but we are healthy and we are safe and we are okay. We overcame this. Are we going to be back to what we were before we were diagnosed? No, but there's a lesson. And I firmly believe that, and this might be my coping mechanism. I firmly believe that every single person who has Lyme disease got Lyme disease for a reason. I really, with all of my being, believe that. And I think that there's a reason and a lesson for my experience and your experience and your experience. And I think that the retraining of the brain, when I started retraining my brain, that's when I started to heal for real. When I started telling myself, whoa, we're okay, actually. We don't need to be in bed anymore. We don't need to feel sick anymore. I'm sure you guys have read You Are the Placebo by you've never read, oh, you have
I
to
have
read it.
not. I'm
You
almost certain Rich has, because Rich has read every book out there, but I have not personally.
I'm blanking out. He's like this most famous he's the most famous, it'll come to me, but he was paralyzed and he meditated himself to health. He was told he would never work again. And essentially I read this book and I was like, okay, I'm gonna heal myself. I'm gonna tell myself that even though I have a disposition, I'm okay. I'm gonna make it through. I might not feel 100%, but I'm gonna make it through. So I think that the mental aspect of it is just as important as the herbs and the antibiotics and the food,
Right.
for
But
sure.
there's also a trigger part there
Yeah.
because people listening, and I was there many years ago, there were, look, we have trauma. We've been told it's all in your head. You're crazy. But what you're saying is not that we're crazy. You're saying that our thoughts and our patterns and the way we think influence the chemicals and the hormones our body releases. And they either bring on inflammation and further cyclical, inflammatory responses, or they bring on a state of healing, rest and digest,
Correct.
or, an overactive nervous system, right? So it's
Yeah.
not to say that our mind got us sick, but it's saying that our mind can be a really effective tool to help us heal and fast track and assist in the healing process, in addition to other modalities, I think is what you're saying, right? Because,
Yes, because
I know people are listening are gonna be like, what are you saying, Alexandra? I can't think myself into healing, right? And I just want to kind of have that debate
no,
with you on this.
no, thank you for bringing me back, because I couldn't heal myself in the beginning either. When I was at my worst, darkest places where I literally wanted to die, and I woke up every day and thought to myself, it would be easier if I wasn't here, because I wouldn't be such a, I mean, all the things, the burdens that you feel, the guilt that you feel, the shame that you feel. I mean, I couldn't do it at that time. But if people are listening that are in that darkest place and feel like, I'm never going to get out of this, I'm never going to feel normal, I'm never going to be able to walk my dog again, I'm never going to be able to work, I'm never going to be able to feed my baby, whatever it is that you want to do, just know that you're strong, and your body is, you're going to do what your body needs to do, and you will get there. It might not be today, it might not be tomorrow, it might not be in the next year, but you will get there. And I think that hope, that knowing, for me at least, was everything. Just the thought of
Yep.
knowing that I could heal by listening to your podcast or talking to someone else who had been through it, just the thought that, okay, there's someone else who gets it and they've been through it. And if they can heal, why can't I heal? It won't be the same, it won't be the same timeline, but if they can do it, I can do it. So it's a package deal, it's a mixed bag. It depends on what you have, right? It depends on the sicknesses that you've been diagnosed with, but you will get there. I really believe that everyone will
Yes.
get there.
And I also think at a very, what you just said is really important. And again, this comment triggered me in the past by other people in the community very early on in my journey when people would say, if you don't have hope, you're never going to heal. And I'm like, that's BS. But I really
Right.
believe it to be true because if you think about it simply and logically, if you don't have hope, you're never going to take steps to try to heal. And if you don't take
Exactly.
steps to heal, you never will heal. So therefore, it is true. If you don't have hope, you won't heal. And that's
Exactly.
very strong and dramatic, but it's simply because you won't take the steps you need to heal your body. And it's multiple things, not one thing that's going to heal you. And I think that's the really important
Exactly.
part there.
Exactly. And people who are challenged with sickness, for whatever the greater universe is trying to teach us, or whatever the reason is, the strongest people I know are people who have Lyme. The strongest people I know are people who have been told for 15, 20 years that they're not sick. And they every day wake up and they say, no, listen to me. I am sick. Something is wrong, and I'm going to find someone who's going to listen to me. And that if that's what gets you through, that's what gets you through. But the hope of knowing that I could have some semblance of normalcy and just like wake up and not want to die every day was everything for me. And I think that if anyone's listening to this, going through that, try your best to just tell your body and to that you're going to make it through. We're going to make it through, and we're all in this together.
Emma, I'm going to throw it back to you. Apologies for going down that
Yeah,
long
no.
side road there. But
No,
did
that was a great road.
you have any more
That was
questions,
a
Emma, about
perfect road.
the pregnancy topic, or if you just want to continue on with the journey of the, decline and the ultimate diagnosis eventually of Lyme here?
Well, can I actually add one more thing? Because we didn't
Yeah.
talk about what happens after you have a baby and you have Lyme. And that's actually for me what happened to me, because I didn't know I had it until after I had him. So we moved here, and once I started getting really sick, I couldn't do what I was able to do before. And that was so traumatizing for me, and I couldn't put him to bed, I couldn't give him a bath, I couldn't feed him, I couldn't go to classes with him, I couldn't do those things anymore. And knowing that us as women, we're just supposed to know how to mom, right? We're just supposed to know how to do it. That's just like in our DNA, right? And to know that I couldn't do what I was most genetically gifted to do was so difficult for me and so traumatizing. And the guilt that I felt was, I mean, I can't even express to you the feelings that I would go through every day watching my husband, or my mom or my dad or my friends, what doing what I wanted to do. And at this time, when he was so little, I never let him know I was sick. I always would get up out of my bed in the morning. I would make it up to his floor where he his room is on the fourth floor. I'd walk up, I'd say hello to him, I'd do what I could, and I'd go back down to bed the second someone had taken him. I didn't want him to be scared, and I didn't want him to, I almost weirdly just didn't even want him to feel the energy of it. I didn't want him to just be around sick energy, which is crazy. Looking back, like he was 2 and 3, he had no idea. He didn't know. But I think for moms listening who are going through it now and have young kids, again, give yourself grace. Your kids will not remember you being in bed. They're not going to remember that. They're just going to remember that mommy's there. I used to bring books into the bed and he'd come hang out with me. I would bring puzzles into it. I mean, bring him to you, bring life to you. Make it fun. Have dinner in bed one night with him. Let him eat, just be kind to yourself and be gracious to yourself, and don't put this pressure that, society puts on us to like be everything all at once, because maybe you can't be what you want to be for him today, but you need to rest and you need to get better so you will be able to be that person for him or her when the time comes. So, yeah.
No, that's so huge. That's so important because I can't, I mean, pregnancy isn't it's my life, but it's, I'm very nervous to get pregnant with Lyme. It's something that I think about
All
on
the
the
time.
regular.
I
So
know.
I, that is great advice. And that was very enlightening for me to hear also. I'd just like to say, having you say that advice that was given to you, if you were to have a child with Lyme, what better parent to have than a parent with Lyme? That
Totally.
was really like it gave a little nice and
Yeah. Oh, I'm so
calm.
glad that
So
resonated, because
me, and I can't
about
imagine how
you.
many others it's going
Yeah.
to.
Okay. Good. Good.
That being said, so when you were so sick,
Yeah.
what led you to Lyme disease? How
Great question.
many, how did
Yeah.
that come up?
So, it was 2021, and I had had the past year, the 2020 leading up to it, no one knew what I had. So I didn't have MS, I didn't have cancer, I didn't have all of the really scary, the scary things that they went had gone through. And I found this doctor, and she said, "You're fine," sent me on my way. And I weirdly enough was at my lowest point, and I was in bed working on my laptop, and I lost vision in my left eye, and I obviously panicked, and then I lost all feeling in the left side of my body. And I called the doctor and I said, "I can't see out of my left eye. I can't feel the left side of my body." She said, "You're having a stroke. Oh my God, you're having a stroke. You have to go to the hospital." And I went to the hospital. They diagnosed me with atypical migraines, whatever that means, and sent me on my way. And I went home, and the next day I called a friend who was very woo-woo and very into functional medicine, and he would go into the forest and go on urine cleanses. And I was always like, "You're crazy. Like, what are you doing with this?" And I called him and I said, I broke down, I was crying, and I said, "I don't know what to do. I don't know who to call. Everyone's failed me. The medical system has failed me. No one believes me. I literally went blind yesterday. I'm gonna die." And he said, "I have a friend who's a doctor who got his medical license taken away at the University of Texas for treating people via herb. He moved to Mexico and he like started this clinic." And I was, "What? I can't, what do you mean? This is crazy." I was so desperate. I had a Zoom call with him, and he was wearing like a Hawaiian shirt on the beach, like doing like ayahuasca. He knew what he was doing. And I was like, "Oh my God, how did I land here? Like, what's happening?" And I said, he's like, "Okay, tell me your symptoms." And I went through all of my symptoms, and he literally stopped me mid-sentence. And he was like, "Babes, you got Lyme disease." And I was like, "What? What is that?" And he said, "You have Lyme disease, and I guarantee you have multiple co-infections of Lyme disease." And I was just floored. And I said, "I don't know what that means. I don't know what you're talking about. There's no way. I've never been bit by a tick. I didn't have the bullseye. I don't know what you're wrong, but thank you. Have a nice life. This is enlightening." And he, "Before you disregard what I'm saying, I want you to go get muscle tested." And I didn't know what that was.
Alexandra,
And
sorry to interrupt. How long was this after you first got sick, right after the surgery and right after the move?
this was so I got my so my surgery was in October December of 2019, and then I started feeling sick in March of 2020 when I moved to Marblehead. And then I first spoke to him. This was probably September of 21. So I he said go get muscle tested. So I had been a year of trauma, suffering. No one knew what was going on, the
Yep.
hallucinations. I thought the trees were talking to me. I couldn't walk down the street because my brain was so inflamed. I didn't know at this point, but I thought the trees were trying to hurt me. I mean, I was like in Locoville. I was fully like, I'm losing my mind. And he
Did they
said,
ever
go.
do a functional MRI for you? Again, sorry to interrupt, but I'm just
That's
curious.
okay.
Did they do a
No.
functional MRI or just a regular MRI with you?
The regular MRI. Yeah.
Yeah. And I
Just.
think unfortunate because same with me, right? I mean, way more MRIs than I'd ever like, and I'm claustrophobic and I hated it,
Yeah.
but I
Oh,
did
of
them.
course. Yeah.
Nothing ever showed up. Then I come to learn from this community that functional MRIs are the ones that show mind brains, not regular MRIs. So it's another thing that if a neurologist was Lyme aware, they would know
Right.
how to
Right.
scan our brains to look for markers of neurological Lyme. Just putting it out there. Sorry.
It would have saved me so much time and so much money if they had done that, if they had done that for me. But no, it was just an old school MRI that showed nothing. And so he said to me, go get muscle tested. And I was like, all right, well, I'm already desperate. I might as well. I'm dying. So like, let's do this. I found this wonderful woman in my town. And I went to see her, and at this point I was so skinny and frail and like pale and just looked horrible and gaunt. And I sat down with her and I said, I have no idea what this is. I know you're not going to find anything. No one finds anything with me. I know how this is going to. I think I just started like hysterically crying in her office for no reason. You could have looked at me and I started crying at this point. I was so sensitive. And she's like, okay, lay down on the table. She did the traditional muscle testing. And within, I think the session was an hour and a half. And I think within 30 minutes, she said to me, you have Lyme disease and you also have a stealth parasitic infection. And I said, you're now the second person who's told me I have Lyme in a matter of 48 hours. Okay, maybe there's something to this. And so she sent me home with a lot of herbs. And she said, this is going to be a really long journey for you. And this is not easy. And take these herbs. I had a bag of about 50 herbs. And I went home and my husband was like, what is this? And I like lined up all the herbs and I just started hysterically crying. I was so overwhelmed. I didn't understand. And at this point, I called the concierge doctor who had cleared me for MS and said everything was fine. And I said, they told me I have Lyme disease. And she said, they're lying to you. They're trying to get your money. You don't have Lyme disease. If you had Lyme disease, I would know because you would have a bullseye rash. If you had Lyme disease, I would be able to know because you would have muscle and joint pain. And that was just not my thing. I never had joint pain. I never had muscle pain. So she was like, that's what Lyme is. And I said, test me. And she said, okay, I'll test you, but you're going to be negative. And I called back the Mexico doctor and he said, just so you know, you will test negative on the Western blot. And I said, well, that's the test. That's what they're giving me. What this, you sound like crazy. What do you mean? If I have Lyme, won't I test? And he said, no, you're going to test negative. You have to order Igenix.
Did you say Mexico doctor? I'm sorry. Did I miss something?
He's the one who was fired from Texas and moved to Mexico
Oh, okay.
to start his own practice in Mexico, treating herbally.
Got it. Okay.
And he said, you're going to test negative, order Igenix, but Igenix will take about 3 weeks to get to your house. So while you're doing this, so I go in, I tested negative 5 times on the Western blot. And I kept telling her, test me again, test me again, test me again. And she's like, I told you don't have it. I got the Igenix test. Shocker to everybody. Not only did I have Lyme, I had five co-infections. I had Epstein-Barr. I had toxoplasmosis. I had all of the things. I had 10 pages of things. And this is when I found Dr. Casey Kelly. My husband's from Chicago. His cousin had Lyme, sent me to Casey Kelly. I called Casey Kelly. I remember my first call with her. I had sent her my labs, and I remember my first call with her. And I started hysterically crying. And I said, I know you think I'm crazy, and I'm scared to tell you all of the things that happened in my day because maybe I am crazy and I'm seeing things and I'm hearing things and blah, 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 blah. And she was like, yeah. She looks and she's like, well, you have Lyme, you have five co-infections. She's like, oh, you have, she goes, you have some really exotic Lyme infections from Europe. This is interesting. And she was like, and you have mast cell activation syndrome, and you have this, and like went down the list. And she was like, of course you're seeing things. Your brain's swollen. And it was the first time in a year and a half that anybody had validated anything that I had gone through. And she almost said it very casually. She was like, yeah, of course. This is normal. You're seeing things. Duh.
And an important lesson here, I think, is I believe your Lyme tests that your doctor were running kept coming up negative because likely you had a very active infection with a European strain, which is very common here in the US. So I think it's bad that we call it a European strain because so many people on this podcast have never left the States and have the quote unquote European strain or strains of Lyme disease. But we're not looking for that in our testing, and the testing isn't really very much accurate at all. So I'm not surprised. I think that's a really good, important message for people listening that just because you're not
Absolutely.
testing positive, it doesn't mean you don't have Lyme. There are hundreds of types of Lyme that we learn from various eyelids doctors, and only a small percentage of them, like a handful, are actually looked for in a Lyme test.
Absolutely. And that's so true. And I think that that's something that I want everyone to know is that if you think you have Lyme, if you suspect anything and you go and you get the Western blot, please don't take that as the end all be all. Please search. I know it's expensive. I know it, and it's so horrible that the expenses that come with this disease, but to try to get a test from Igenix, from Vibrant, from wherever you're going to go to get tested, try to push, because that test is going to be the most important test you ever take in your entire life. So when I met with her, she went through all of my things, and that was the first time she said, I want to confirm, and she made it a point to look me in the eye. And this was all via Zoom. It was during COVID. And one of the reasons I love her so dearly is she made a point to look me in the eye and say to me, you have Lyme disease. This is real. You're not crazy. And that's when I started treating. And that's when everything changed for me. And she said to me, I'm very concerned about the toxoplasmosis. I'm almost concerned about that more than your Lyme at this moment. And just for people who don't know, Toxoplasma gondii or toxoplasmosis, I personally think it infects more people than known at this point after I've done all of my research over the past 4.5 years. But Toxoplasma gondii is really scary. If you've ever heard of the crazy cat lady, that's where it comes from. Toxoplasmosis lives in your body, lives in your brain. It gets in the tissues. They say it comes from cats. I've never had a cat. I've never once been touched a cat.
Undercooked and red meat as well.
Exactly. So then I started learning, because she's like, do you have a cat? And I said, no, I have a dog. I don't have a cat. And she said, well, here are the ways: undercooked red meat. She said, you can even get it from a cutting board. And so we found out that I had this, and that's what caused my vision loss in my left eye. And she said, your brain is very swollen. And she said, there's two things we can do. We can treat you all herbally, or we can treat you with a mix of herbals and pharmaceuticals. At this point, I had no idea about antibiotics and what they did. I was like, let's do it. Give me all the stuff. I want to dive in. I want to go hard and fast. I'm so ill. I just want to get better. And she said, I suggest you go that route of the pharmaceuticals, because I really want to aggressively treat your toxoplasmosis. You can go blind if you don't treat it. People have really high suicide rates who have toxoplasmosis. People are extremely depressed and aggressive. A lot of people who've committed murders and crime have toxoplasmosis. So it's a very scary thing. And so we treated very aggressively for the Lyme and the toxoplasmosis. I was on antibiotics for almost 6 months, and every day I woke up and I said, I can't take another day. It made everything so much worse. It made everything so much harder. I was sicker than I'd ever been. And I said to her after 6 months, I can't do it anymore. I can't do it. Please test me to see. That's test early. We were going to test in a year. Test me early so I can see if I can just treat herbally. And we tested, and lo and behold, my levels were down significantly, and I was able to just treat herbally. And 3 weeks after I was off the antibiotics, I was like skipping around and felt so much better, because Antibiotics, just I was herxing all day, every day,
Yeah.
24/7, and it was just so aggressive. But I had to do it. And looking back, I wouldn't change anything. I had to do it.
Yeah, I think, taking the middle of the road approach to this, and look, myself, I've been on antibiotics even as recently as last year. I've been on antibiotics for an acute tick bite and an acute infection because I think they have their time and place. But there's things we can do to strengthen our immune system and our gut health to ensure that we don't have some of the collateral damage from broad spectrum antibiotics. But I also feel that in your case, it worked well, and thankfully you weren't negatively impacted for the long term. But a lot of doctors, especially a lot of doctors lately, have been cautioning us, if you are not well enough, strong combination antibiotics will actually make you worse because your body is so compromised that if your body can't tolerate it, you're going to be worse, in the long run. So I think it's a really a personal decision in collaboration with your
I
doctors.
think I am worse. I think you're right. I am worse. My stomach's completely destroyed. But it was kind of like I had to pick the lesser of the evils at that point. But I think you're right. I mean, long-term antibiotics are really, really scary.
Yeah, and I just want to throw something else out there because anybody who listens to this podcast probably knows by now that I love Dr. Jill Carnahan. She's one of my favorite people in the world, and she just was, I think, is so brilliant. And she talked about how various species of mold cause different psychological symptoms, whether it's depression, anxiety, aggression, suicidal ideations. All of these things are associated with different species of mold that we've proven. And above and beyond that, we've learned. Dr. Bill Rawls, one of our favorite herbalists who I use his protocols, his father passed away from toxoplasmosis as well. So, it's one of those things where it's an opportunistic pathogen, but if you're immune compromised and you're weak, it's going to take over and make you really ill. And in your
Absolutely.
case, with the vision loss and also the psychological symptoms, you were compromised from Lyme and a ton of co-infections, probably things you don't even know you have or had because we all do. And toxoplasmosis was really kicking off. Plus, you had the Lyme kicking off, which creates neural symptoms. And then you had the mold exposure, which creates different mold personalities that we've as we've learned from other people. So you had it all these different angles impacting your brain, your psychology, all things like that. And I think you needed more than just antibiotics, which I'm not saying they weren't helpful because they definitely are like the carpet bomb to remove a lot of the bugs. But I think you needed a lot more to help repair your body or support your body in parallel to them.
100%. I couldn't have said that better. I did the combo, and then I got just to the herbals, and I still wasn't feeling that great, but it was better than the herxing all day. I needed a break from that. I decided to switch care because I wanted to see someone more hands-on. I couldn't see Dr. Kelly. She was in Chicago. So I also decided to tandemly hire a doctor who is dear to me. Her name is Dr. Tao, from the Morrison Clinic in New York City. And when I started seeing her, we were treating just herbally. I'm still seeing her to this day. And we've been herbal for since 2022, we'll say. But when I was on this journey of healing with the antibiotics, I want people to know that you think antibiotics, oh, I have an ear infection, I'm going to take an antibiotic and then I'm going to be okay, right? That's not what happens with Lyme, or at least it's not what happened with me. Like you said, it carpet bombed, but it only carpet bombed some, and it made a lot of things really mad. And it really made other things come to light. And I think that when I started working with Dr. Tao, when I saw her, I was like, I'm doing pretty well, but there's a lot of other stuff that's going on. You get used to feeling so horrible that when you don't really remember what it's like to not feel horrible. And so when I started seeing her, I said, there's some other stuff going on. And basically what she found when we peeled this onion back is not only did I have Lyme, and I was healing from the Lyme and the toxo, and the hypothyroidism and the Hashimoto's and all that stuff, I had an abundance of parasites. I had mold poisoning. I had a candida overgrowth in the lining of my stomach. We said I had the mast cell activation syndrome. We didn't know this, but I was living in mold. I was going to the bathroom 10, 12 times a day. Worms that were from the tip of my finger to my
Without any binders or parasite meds, that was happening, just straight up without anything.
That started happening once I started the cleanse.
The cleanse, okay.
That's when I started starting the parasite cleanse, but I'd say about 2 months after I started antibiotics is when the gut stuff started happening.
Let me
I
ask
was
you a
on.
question about that, Alexandra, because I wonder, and I think in your case, is this does this line up where the antibiotics can result in candida or, yeast overgrowth in your gut. That then creates an inflammatory response, which then triggers the mast cell activation syndrome, which is even more of a cyclical, inflammatory response in your body. And that further weakens your body. So I think those are the downstream effects of antibiotics you're referring to, where they're killing all these bugs, but they're causing yeast, they're causing it, which creates inflammation, which creates MCAS, which creates all these other things that then cause this like ripple effect to really make you even sicker. So that's the side I was referring to that you need to balance. Was that your experience where the antibiotics triggered the candida, which triggered the MCAS, which triggered the cascade of symptoms?
The antibiotics wiped out everything good that was in my body at that point. I had nothing. I had no good bugs at that time. And when I remember vividly about a month, 3 weeks after I started taking the antibiotics, everything changed for me. I looked 6 months pregnant. I was so bloated. My stool was off. I mean, everything started in gut related when I started the antibiotics, and I think it definitely triggered everything. And it's like I had to do it, right? I had to do some of that. And I was on a probiotic, I was on multiple probiotics, I was on binders, I was on all of these things, and I think that it just my body was just so shot, and there was just so much happening. And I was living in mold, which I didn't know. So not all so now I'm exposed to an environmental toxin. We found mold twice in the past 4 years, which is horrible. And I'm still dealing with that. But I think that when you do the antibiotics, it takes you out, right? And you have to, it's really important. My advice to people is make sure you're with a doctor who is giving you so much support to balance that. And my other bit of advice is don't do what I did and say like, I want to go hard, I want to go all in. Like, it just slow down and realize that the harder you go and the faster you go, it doesn't always mean you're going to heal fast. And that was something I really learned.
Did Dr. Casey Kelly mention detoxing or herbs to support your body, mitochondrial growth?
Yeah, I
Was
was
that
on over 150 herbs per day. I mean, it
okay?
was out of control the amount of herbs I was taking. And I think that I only imagine how much worse I would feel if I wasn't on those supporting detox herbs, right? Everyone is, I don't know, maybe not everyone I've met who has Lyme, we're just so sensitive. We're just so sensitive like that. And so things that might not affect other people affect us so differently. So yes, I was on the detox, I was on the binders, I was on the mast cell activation stuff, I was on a gluten-free, dairy-free, sugar-free, soy-free, I was on it all. I was vegan for 11 years before I was diagnosed with Lyme. I was told I had to start eating meat, so I started eating meat. I mean, I did everything that I was told to do, and I committed to every practice and every I the acupuncture and the meditation and the energy healing, all of the things. And the detox, without the detox, I probably would have been in a much worse spot. But now I can't live without detox. Before, I didn't appreciate the detox because I still felt so yucky when you're in it. But now the detox is so important, and I've learned about all of the drainage pathways and the lymph system and all of that. So it's such a big part of this journey is detox. I mean, I say the word detox 10,000 times a day.
Absolutely. So really quick, with Lyme and your experience with Dr. Kelly, did you feel better? Not like, not healed, but better than when you started with her? Like, did the antibiotics, did the herbs, did they give you any sort of relief?
So I felt way worse before I felt better, which she told me was going to happen. She didn't sugarcoat it with me. She said, this is not going to be easy. You're going to feel really yucky. And then there came a point where I could tolerate it better. And I think it's also your body knows what to expect, right? So the first time is the scariest. Our first Herx is the scariest Herx, right? And then after we Herx 20, 50 times, you're like, okay, I got this. It's going to suck, but I'm going to do it. So there was a time that the antibiotics, I think, were horrible, but manageable for sure. And then I've only been, I haven't been on antibiotics in years and years and years. It's all herbal now. And people ask me all the time with the company that I started recently, do you suggest that I do antibiotics or should I just do herbal? And I think it's really dependent on what you have, your diagnosis, your lifestyle. Can you afford to be at home a lot? And can you afford to know that you're going to have to say no to going to dinners a lot, and you're going to have to say no to your friends and no to all those things. So I think all those things are really important when deciding, do you want to go in with antibiotics? Do you want to do herbs, or do you want to do a combination? I always like to say, if you can tolerate a combination, try to if you need it. If that's what, right? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so what led you to Dr. Tao, who I actually treated with myself, lovely
Yeah.
lady?
Oh my God, I love her.
Great practice.
So I love her. So she's in New York City. I wanted someone a little bit closer. And I think we all get to this point in our healing journey, or maybe it's just me, but things get stagnant. You kind of plateau sometimes.
Yeah,
And I
absolutely.
was such a complex case. I had so much going on. That not only did I want someone hands-on in the city where I could go to do treatments, or for someone to just touch me and see me and feel me versus doing a Zoom, but I also wanted a new perspective, because it's very easy to just accept you have Lyme. It's accept to say, like, all right, you accept I'm gonna feel like this forever. I'm not gonna feel, maybe I'll only feel 50% forever, but I wasn't okay with that. And I wanted to fight harder. I wanted to fight more. I wanted to go the extra mile and say, like, well, let's just get another set of eyes here, because I'm still not there 100%. And when I went to Dr. Tao, she's a very, everyone's different. They all take different approaches. And she went really deep on other things. And look, you can only treat one thing at a time. I don't expect any doctor to treat me for all 25 things that I have at one time, right? You have to chip away at
Yeah.
it. But she chipped away at it, and we've been working really slowly, and we've been, I mean, she healed me to where I am now, and I'm so grateful for her and her whole staff. And she has a wonderful practitioner there. Her name is Robin Fortan, who was my gut specialist, who I still work with. I don't know if you ever worked with Robin,
I
but
believe the nutritionist.
yes.
Yes.
And she's helped me so much, and I think that the body's ever changing, and we're evolving with this disease, and we're still learning so much about it. So I've learned so much from the Morrison Center, and I'm still learning. I'm still treating. I'm still on multiple herbs. I'm still doing all of the things, and I'm still not 100%. So, but having someone close by makes me feel like a little bit more in control of everything if I need to go there and, see them in person.
So, what were the symptoms that you were experiencing that led you to the change in doctor? Were they like the persistent symptoms that stuck around?
Yeah, I just felt like blah, like every day. Like I just was tired still, and I was still really brain foggy. And I had these rushes, which I think you said, did you mention this at the beginning, that you used to, I don't know if that, I thought you said that, but I got these rushes where like I would just be sitting there, and all of a sudden I would be like knocked off my feet, and I'd start sweating. And
Yes,
I, yeah, and
yes.
I, and I didn't know what it, no one knew what it was. And I was dizzy, and then it was almost like I had a panic attack. So those were happening frequently. I also was very anxious, which I've never been in my life. And I wasn't anxious about being sick. It was just like a wave of
New
panic.
anxiety.
Yeah. It was just this like actual acute panic. And I'd just be sitting there eating breakfast with my son, and all of a sudden I'd feel like dread. And I was like, oh my God, what's happening? Why do I feel like this? And so it was stuff like that that was happening. It was, that, and it was happening frequently. And when I just thought it was time for new eyes.
Absolutely,
Yeah,
yeah,
that was
makes
really what it
sense.
was. Yeah.
Okay. Were those new symptoms that arose, or were they kind of symptoms that you would experience at the onset of everything,
So
living
they
with mold?
happened infrequently at the beginning. They happen rarely. And then as after I came off of the antibiotics, they started weirdly happening more and more. I just shook a lot up, I think, and so much was happening. But it was happening frequently. And those were really scary, because I couldn't drive. That was really hard for me because I would be driving and I would get this like really strange tunnel, like tunnely vision where like I felt like I was in a video game or I felt like I was in a movie. And so I said, okay, this is something I need to hear. My body's telling me I need to listen to this. And it just kept happening more and more. And that really subsided for me. The mast cell activation syndrome was a killer. I had no idea what it was. And I think that paired along with like the Lyme still being active, but my levels were much lower, caused a ton of inflammation. And I was eating foods that I didn't know I wasn't supposed to be eating with the mast cell activation. So I think those things just kept happening, which led me to do that. Yeah.
And now, where are you now? How are you feeling? What are your symptoms like now? And what is maintenance like?
So I'm feeling so much better. I'd say I'm like 95%, which is I never thought I would get there. So I'm so grateful that I'm there. I have good days and I have bad days. But when I do have bad days, I don't freak out anymore because I have such an arsenal of tools and I have such a core support system that I can go to and say, what do? I feel so weird, or so I don't feel as bad, which I think keeps my body so much more calm, so I don't panic and get into that fight or flight. I started doing really cool new things to keep my body where it is. I started doing something called firefly therapy, which is frequency therapy.
Is it Firefly, like Firefly?
Yes,
Okay.
firefly. And it's this new Dr. Bale. Have you heard of Dr. Bale's photonics? He
No.
started it. It's a really cool machine. You essentially put your finger in like a pulsometer and it scans your entire body from head to toe via frequency of all of the things that you have. So I go to this woman who's wonderful. Her name is Betty Wu. She's in Natick, Massachusetts. And I went to her and I put my finger in and it scans everything. So she's like, you have Lyme, you have E. coli, you have herpes, you have, I mean, every single thing that all of us
Everything.
have in our body that no one can escape has. And then you lay down, and she takes these little scanners that are activated by light treatment. You put on a pair of sunglasses, you lay down, and it's warm, and you go over the part of the body that has the highest frequency of disease. And that really helped me. When I was living in mold for the first time, I gained 30 pounds out of nowhere. I couldn't lose the weight. Nothing was shifting for me. The Lyme was reactivated. I was feeling really sick again. I was having a lot of bad days, more than good. And that's really helped me. So I do a lot of maintenance. I don't want anybody listening to think that I just healed and I'm living my life. Not every day, I still think about all of this stuff. And every day, I still wake up and I have my herbs that I take a bajillion times a day. I'm still eating gluten-free, dairy-free, sugar-free, soy-free. I'm still doing all of these things. And I'm feeling really good, but I think I'm feeling really good because I'm doing a lot of stuff, right? I have hard boundaries now. Like you were mentioning before, your trigger was going into public settings, right? I don't do things anymore that don't make me feel good. I don't apologize for it anymore, right? This is what my body needs. So my triggers are less. And that really helps. So for people listening that are trying to just calm things down, quiet things down, slow things down, it's okay to say no. It's okay. Do you heal? That's what your body needs. And don't feel that pressure to do that. I'm still doing tons of detox. The mast cell activation is right now my number one current issue. My histamine levels are off the charts. No one knows why. I've been on a low histamine diet for over a year. I'm on histamine herbs. I have done five parasite cleanses, which can also trigger the mast cells. It's bizarre. No one can figure it out. So if anyone has tips, let me know. We're still trying to figure that out. And it's very weird. My body is not responding the way that most people with mast cell activation responds. Usually you'll get a rash or you'll feel symptoms of having a cold. You'll sneeze, you'll have itchy eyes, you'll have itchy skin. I don't have any of that, which is really weird. It's just on my labs. And I just feel a little off. So that's where I'm treating now. But I went to get Firefly the other day and Lyme came back up and I was just like, oh my God, are you kidding me? It's like, how is it back? And she said something really true and telling to me. And she said, and she's this like majestic, magical woman. And she said, this is just information. This is just information. That's our bodies are all made up of frequency. That's all we are. It's just information. Don't give, she said, don't give life to the Lyme. And I was like, okay. And I was like driving home and I was like, what does that mean? Don't give life to the Lyme. I have Lyme. I acutely have Lyme. But then it like hit me and I was like, oh. And it hit me. And I said, if I keep telling myself I'm going to be sick from Lyme, I'm going to continue to feel sick from Lyme. I have the tools, I have the people. It's going to be okay. Take a breath, do what you know what you have to do, and you're going to be okay. And I think that really stuck with me, that like we can't give life to all of these things all the time and let it take over. It can't flip the scale. There has to be some form of balance there.
On that note of information
Yes.
and not only not giving Lyme life, but taking what little life Lyme has left in your body away, I want to ask you very specific questions that I know people listening are going to want to hear because you did have such a radical transformation. You were so sick and you are so well now. What specifically has helped you with various areas? And it's hard to say, but like specifically with mold, do you recall what binders and what tools you use to overcome the mold exposure that you can share with our listeners?
Sure. So I was on carboxybind, is that what it's called? I was on that for a very long time. I was on carboxy. I am on a slew of other like CoQ10, all of the baseline stuff, CoQ10, tons and tons of magnesium, which really helped me. I have to give a shout out to my favorite magnesium brand, Symbiotica, because I've never felt the way I do. I've tried all of everything, but they to me have been so powerful. Their magnesium, it's liposomally absorbed, and I just feel like for my body it works so well. Sauna changed my life. I ordered the higher dose sauna blanket, and helped me detox and open up those pathways with the mold. Castor oil packs have been huge for me. I'm trying to staying away from moldy foods. I was like eating peanut butter every day out of a jar with a spoon, right? So learning
That's me
about
right now. Are you calling me out? I eat peanut butter every day out of a jar.
don't eat the peanuts, right? So things that are really high in mold, which I had no idea about. I was just living my life every day eating peanut butter every day or nuts or whatever it was. So being mindful of that. To even just this morning, this is crazy. I have two dates a day that are supposed to help with parasites. I always cut into my dates because they're supposed to be so high in mold. And I kid you not, the second I cut into my mold spores flew off of the cutting board. Black mold spores flew off. And I was like, oh my, like it was out of a,
Whoa.
right? So just being mindful of all of that. But this, I think to answer your question about the mold, the sauna really helped. The binders really helped. I'm on so much stuff, so it's hard to determine what's actually doing what specifically. But sweating was good for me. And just like getting the mold out and drinking a ton of, and I'm going to say this, filtered spring water. I can't say this more than enough. I mean, people, I know it's expensive, I know it's hard, but the water you drink when you have mold poisoning is it's so important. It's so detrimental. So trying to get some good clean water in you is really important. So yeah, I hope I answered that.
You did, and I'm gonna have to confess again. Dr. Jess called me out about a year and a half ago. I told her I was drinking tap water, and she like freaked out. She's like, "What is wrong with you?" I'm like, "Yeah, sometimes it's from the bathroom sink too." And she goes, "What's wrong with you?" So now I'm not gonna lie. Our viewers and listeners can't see this, but I have a filtered water bottle. It's a Life Straw, and this is
Good
the
for
best I
you.
do. It's still like tap water, but it goes through a filter in the water bottle, so it's not
Well,
ideal, but.
that's so much better. No one, the tap water thing is like a whole other podcast. And it's keeping us all so sick. And when I changed my water, I really felt differently. I really did. And now if anybody that I'm with goes for the tap water, it's like they're on fire. And I run to them and I'm like, no, you can't do this. What do you can't drink tap water. And everyone thinks I'm crazy.
Give me more of the why, right? Because like people listening, and I even pushed back. Just like, why? Why is tap water so bad? I don't understand.
Yeah, no, it's well, one, the lead and the mercury and all of the things. Like, think about it. We pee and we pee into the toilet, and that toilet goes into the sewer, and then all of that is now being ingested by us. And it's and there's just there's really there they don't have, their sewers aren't the pipes aren't cleaned, and it's just yucky and horrible and.
I love the images of pipes in a home. Like, oh, this is a 20-year-old home, and look at the pipes, and they pull them out. Like, all the nasty, disgusting stuff inside the pipes. Ugh, you know?
It's talk about mold, like talk about all of, I mean, it's just horrible. And it's really, and like I talk about this with my clients all the time. Why do we even have to worry about the water we're drinking, right? But we do, unfortunately. So we have to be mindful. So get yourself a water filter. Get, if you can afford it, get a whole house filter. If you can't, get an underwater filter. If you can't afford an underwater filter, there's so many great brands that you can literally hang around the faucet that will filter the water before they come out. I talk about this with my clients all the time. I have a million brands that I can give you. Shower filter is really important. People who take baths and are sitting in bath water that isn't filtered, it's just being absorbed into your skin, and it's just scary. We don't want that. So filter your water,
Let
people.
me share a fun story about that one. So
Okay.
our skin is our largest detox organ,
Right.
right? And I think we've heard
Right.
that all probably a
Yeah.
lot, even our most of our listeners. But I am, whether you're into the health and wellness community or not, if you're my friend, you're going to hear these kind of things. So I have a buddy at work who plays hockey, and he goes and plays 11 o'clock at night, plays until like 1, 2 in the morning, then would come home and crash and come to work at 9 o'clock. And he'd always
Yeah.
tell me, like, yeah, I just feel like crap after playing hockey. It must be because, I'm just, my body's not used to it. I'm getting older, blah, 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 blah. And he goes, and he was just sharing how he sweats a lot. He's disgusting afterwards, and he has to just crash. I go, dude, all that sweat is being reabsorbed back into you. Your body works so hard to expel those toxins through your skin. It's a detox organ. You go
Yeah.
home, it's all dried up, and you're absorbing all those toxins back
Laying
in.
in it.
And that's why you're sluggish the next day. He's like, you're crazy. I'm like, just take a shower. Next time you get home, do me a favor, just do it. Take a shower. He's been telling me for the last, I don't know how long it's been now, several
Life
months.
changing.
He's like, I played hockey last night and I showered and I feel fine today. Like, so and he's a healthy young guy, but like, it's such small things like that are so meaningful,
Oh
and
my
that's
God.
why I think
It's such a,
I'm so happy you're sharing these types of
yeah,
things.
no, it's, people don't think about the little things like that. I mean, the water is so important that we're drinking, and we're, and people who are sick with Lyme and other co-infections, being hydrated is so important, and it plays such a big role. I mean, I don't start my day without water, lemon, electrolytes. I mean, water is my life force. So if I'm not drinking clean water, I'm just setting myself up for failure for the rest of the day.
Tell me what you think about salt. For some reason, salt has been on
Yeah.
my radar, and I think it's all the Instagram algorithms and the social media and the TikTok algorithms that see I stop and I read them because I find them interesting. But there's such controversy over salt, which is so funny when you think about it. But some people are saying salt is the enemy, salt is bad, you want no sodium. And I'm not talking about like artificial sodium to preserve like frozen foods. That's not what I'm speaking of. But
Right.
some people like no salt, no salt, no salt. And other people like salt is really important for
Yep.
your body because no matter how much water you drink, you won't get proper hydration to nourish your cells if you don't have salt along with water. So what do you think about that? Because I feel like some people in the Lyme community go to two extremes, right? Like I can't have any salt, but do our bodies really need some salt in order to function and, be optimal in our healing process here?
I'm a salt girly through and through. I salt changed my life.
Same.
Changed my life, and I only do Celtic sea salt. I found after doing all the research, because there was all that research that came out recently about the Himalayan having really high levels of mercury. So I switched over to the Celtic, and salt changed my life. I wake up and I just put it in my hands and put it right on my tongue. It gets right in there. It's absorbed. I just feel like our bodies, we've been programmed to think, like you said, we don't need salt. We need salt. We need it 100%. It feeds us. We need that sodium inside of us. And again, I'm not saying go to McDonald's and eat French fries. I'm saying get a well thought out clean salt that you know has been sourced properly. And I love salt. For people who are like, I don't want to eat salt, it's going to make me bloated or gain weight. I eat salt
No.
every morning. It does not do that. I feel so good. I feel energized. I feel more sharp mentally. I also take with this after the salt, I take a lot of things, but one of the things that have helped has really helped me is glutathione, and I take it right after I have my salt. I also take I'm blanking out on it right now.
Well, so why are you thinking? I have a question for you because you're calling me out again, and I love how much of what you're saying is like a personal thing to me that you don't even know about, right? So when it comes to the salt, I've been thinking about because I've read a lot about starting your day with just taking a little bit of Celtic salt, and this is like a really cool low tip, a low cost tip to just help improve your health to start your day. Take a little bit of salt, put it on your tongue, and move on your day. And there's so many benefits of doing that. But like, what does that look like for you? So tell our listeners, you can go to Amazon Celtic, right? Celtic salt. You buy it, and what do? You take it and just put it on your tongue and let it dissolve. You just wash it
So
down with some
I have
water.
a
What's the process?
So I like to take it without food, right? I put it on food also throughout my day, but when I first wake up in the morning, I've been on a fast. I personally stop eating dinner around 5:30 at night. So and then I fast and I sleep fasted. I wake up. I like to take it so it goes straight, gets absorbed directly into my body with like 30 ounces of water. And I just have it in a little dish and I keep it in my kitchen and I just walk over and I pop it. I take like a little handful, like just like a pinch, put it in my mouth and have some water with it. And I feel really good after I do that. I can really feel a difference. After I do that, you can go, if you go to Whole Foods, you just want to get Celtic salt. You can go on Amazon and get Celtic salt. I think that if you can, I would stay away from the Himalayan just because of all of the studies that have come out. And then throughout the day, I put it on my food. And I'm not talking about like throwing it on. I'm not saying like don't eat pounds and pounds of salt, but sprinkle a little bit on it. You feel you're. I always say to my clients that I feel like it's like the gasoline in the car, right? It just kind of gives you like a zhuzh, like an extra pump of energy.
So you keep saying your clients, and now I want to get to the part of, okay, we talked about your journey, we talked about your tips and your tricks and your recommendations because you have so much knowledge and there's so much more we can get into, but I want to make sure we highlight what you're doing to give back and help the community because you kind of stumbled into it. You were just helping people all the time. People were reaching out from all across the country, asking you for guidance, word of mouth was spreading, and you were just basically doing this nonstop. And then, you realize that there's more you could do to help the community. So walk us through that transition to just kind of helping people and then forming, this official business to help people and give back and really focus on Lyme patients and people with Lyme-like symptoms and tick-borne illnesses.
Sure. So, I just became obsessed with healing, like so many of us are. And I realized I had to be an advocate for myself and do it myself because no one else was doing it for me. And I went on this 4-year journey of educating myself on Lyme and everything it's about and all of the things that happen after you have Lyme. And I kept getting calls from, my brother's sister's mother's uncle has Lyme and he doesn't know what to do. Can you talk to him? And then they would refer me. And then people in my small community here, I'd see them out at the coffee shop or wherever, and they'd say, "Oh, I heard you have Lyme, and I don't know what to do. I think I got to," and it happened like that. Or then people started calling me and saying, like, "Well, what toothpaste should I use? And then what should I use for deodorant? Or what's a safe water? Or what should I do about eating gluten?" And it just organically happened. And I kept every week with talking to more and more people, and I said. And I never was frustrated by it. And I never was like, ugh, like I don't want to do this. It was always the opposite. I've never felt better than when I'm helping other people. And I really believe that that's why I got sick. And I know this sounds so crazy and woo-woo and spiritual, but I really believe that that's why I got sick. And I think that I got sick to help other people. There's not a lot of people in the world who know about this disease. And there's no better person to help you get through it than someone who's been through it, right? There's no better person to advocate for you. And so I started this company called Armour. It's ARMUR, Armour Health. And I wanted to give people the armor that they needed. I wanted to give people the tools that they needed. And I wanted people who were feeling so unsafe to start feeling safe again. I felt so safe for so many years in my own body. I felt like my body was attacking me. And I started this company with the intention of being a holistic health consultant and talking to people about not only Lyme and what it does to your family and acting as Someone that they could just talk to as like a life coach almost to understand their struggles. But also, okay, I have Lyme and now what do I do? What do I eat? What do I take? If I can't afford to go to a doctor for $500 an hour, or I can't afford to travel to to a program in Mexico to do a treatment or an IV, can you help me? And that's what I do now. And I offer multiple services that stem from coming into your home and helping you clean out your foods, teaching you how to ozonate or clean your fruits and vegetables, help you with all of the products, toothpaste, deodorant, razor, shampoo, body wash, detergent. I mean, soap, anything you can think of that we're all putting into our bodies a bajillion times a day and not thinking about it. And it's been so amazing. And I'm so grateful and I feel exactly where I'm supposed to be. And people who have Lyme, I want them to feel like they can just talk to me. And I have people sometimes that call me once a week and just vent for 30 minutes and just say like, I had a really hard doctor's appointment, or my husband doesn't understand what I'm going through. My husband is giving me a hard time that I couldn't do the dishes, but I'm so tired. I couldn't get out of bed. I couldn't do the dishes. And so it's this really beautiful program of helping others and giving people whatever they need in that moment. And it's been so rewarding. And I love it so much.
I want to encourage everybody to go check out your website. It's armur.health, armur.health. There's some information on there. There's a link for people to contact you to figure out what it's going to look like if they want to work with you. And, look, you obviously have shared a ton of information that, people are going to listen, know you have information that can help them. And I'm really encouraging people to go reach out and check out your website. But I do want to end by asking you our new final question that we've been asking recently, which is, if you had to offer three low cost, no cost tips for Lyme healing, specific tips, what would those three tips be?
Ooh, why only three? Is this after you've been diagnosed with Lyme and you're now heal on your healing journey?
Once you have a Lyme diagnosis, and it could be a maintenance phase, it could be at the early stages, three things that you recommend that are low cost or no cost that people can do to aid in their healing journey.
My number one tip, this is going to be crazy. People are going to be thrown and hate me. Stop drinking coffee.
No.
Yes.
Hang up right now,
We're
Matt. I'm
done.
done.
I
I'm
like you right until this point,
done.
Alexander. I'm kidding.
What just happened? No, I'm kidding.
We're walking away.
So I was a coffee lover. I love coffee. We all love our coffee. The cortisol rush was that I would get, I couldn't handle it. And when I came off of the coffee, everything changed for me. Everything changed for me. And I don't want to take up too much time explaining that, but my body was like, no joke, went from here into homeostasis. It took about 6 weeks to get fully leveled out, but I cold turkeyed it and I just did no coffee and I switched to matcha, which, yes, everyone listening, it does have caffeine, of course, but you're getting your caffeine, you're feeling caffeinated, but you're not spiking your cortisol. You don't have the jitters when you come off of it and you don't feel like hyped up and you don't feel that like almost addictive tendency that you have, like, I need my coffee. And I realized that was so important for my body with when I had Lyme, is that it was putting me into overdrive. So if you can take the coffee out of the rotation, and I promise you'll feel better. I promise. I've never told anybody to do that, and they have done it, and they've said to me it didn't work. Every single person without fail is like, okay, I hate you, but it's working. So that's number one. Number two, meditation. Another free tip I can give you. And I know this sounds like wonky and people who aren't necessarily into this, but your brain and your body are so connected and your brain is so powerful. And when our bodies are going through trauma from Lyme and our bodies are so hyped up from the fight or flight, you have to calm yourself. And by calming yourself, it allows you to get into rest and digest. And it took me probably 4 months to really commit to the practice. And I hated it. I hated it. I never wanted to do it. I didn't want to sit there. I was thinking about what I was going to eat for breakfast. I didn't get it. And then it clicked after I really committed to it.
What
And
does that
I
look like?
never.
Because what does it mean to meditate, right? I mean, a lot of people listening are going to be saying in their minds, I don't understand. What does that mean?
So
People that are religious, it could be prayer, people that aren't religious, but I just feel like they're, we need a little more detail about what
sure.
meditation looks like. I
So
mean,
you
obviously
would.
people can go to YouTube, but what is your view of meditation and what do you do where it's been beneficial in your experience?
So for me, my meditation is breath work. That's what I do for meditation. So I like to do I think I'm on a roller coaster. I get to the top of the roller coaster. So I breathe in for 7, I hold for 4, and I release for 5. So I really envision myself on the roller coaster right before you're about to fall, you plateau, and then you go down. And I do that about 30 times.
I love that visual. That was very, as you
But
described that, I saw it in my mind. So that was
right.
very
It's
helpful.
easy, right? To like think
Yes.
of yourself, you're here, and then you're falling down and you're exhaling. Music is important to me when I meditate. So put on some really calming meditative music, any tranquil sounds that you can. And it's really doing that breath work, and it doesn't have to be a mantra. Some people like to say mantras. It's breathing in and holding it and really giving oxygen to every single cell in your body, and just taking a beat. And just, we don't breathe during the day. If you think about it, when do we sit there and go all day? No, we're not breathing, and we're in a constant state of stress. So for me, it's waking up in the morning and doing the meditation, and it can start off slow, start off for 2 minutes, and then if you can go up, it doesn't have to be anything crazy. So it's the breath work. Okay, and then my third and final, this is so hard because there's so many. I think my diet, I would say, and I'm giving all free tips because I know people are spending so much money on healing. I don't want to tell people to go do more that costs money. Food for me was huge. So cutting out the gluten. I've never met a person with Lyme who didn't feel better. And that's not to say you can't go back to the gluten, but while you're healing, I think cutting out the gluten and the refined sugar and the dairy is very, very helpful, and it kind of puts your body at a nice starting point for healing. And no one come for me. I'm not saying this forever. It's you can probably go back. I've chosen not to because I feel so good. But I think being really mindful about what we put into our bodies. I think we rush. We live in America. We're eating over the kitchen sink while our kids are waiting to go to school. I mean, I try really hard, and it really helped me for digestion, sitting down when I eat, not standing, sitting, being mindful of my food. Almost thanking the food, almost being grateful for the food and not mindlessly sitting there and eating and rushing. Because when you eat so fast and you swallow so much air, you become so bloated, and then you feel yucky, and then you don't digest the food properly. That really helped me when I was at my sickest days, was like kind of pausing and just sitting and chewing really well. Really, really, really using my teeth. Like I never thought of my teeth like I did during those times when I was so ill, and chewing my food, like get everything down to a pulp. And just being slow with your body. I think that was really, really helpful for me also.
Well, Alexandra Brooke Clark, I can't thank you enough for joining our Tick Bootcamp podcast. You have been absolutely amazing, and we've learned so much from you. And Emma, thank you again for coming back and co-hosting.
Thank you.
Thank you guys so much. I'm so grateful to be here.